You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Noir Al-Sadir. Noir, thanks so much for talking with me today.
It's my pleasure.
Noir, we've talked before, and you've read poetry and talked about your books. I guess to begin with, I want to congratulate you on being shortlisted for the fourth person singular, your 2017 volume, for the best collection in England. And is that correct? And what was the award for that?
That was in September. The Forward Prize is in England. It was for best collection in England and Ireland. And recently I heard that I'm a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award here in America.
Well, that's exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited too.
And when we last talked, you know, you were reading poetry, and also when we were talking afterwards, when we were off the record, we were discussing audiences and different perception by different audiences and how people read to different audiences and a number of kind of nuances in there. So maybe just to begin to get involved in that, we were also talking about what the fourth person singular would actually look like a little bit. So to enter into that conversation, which is kind of picking up from where we left off a while ago, maybe we should talk about readings, what that means in terms of different types of people presenting at different readings to different audiences. Does that sound okay to start there?
Sure. Personally, whenever I think of a reading, I first think of the writing. I don't usually think of the reception of the work as I'm writing it. And in fact, fourth person singular, the way I wrote it, I had promised it to an editor at a press, and I was pushing my deadline back further and further. And then I reached a point where I really only had a little over a month to do it, and I had to do it. And so I removed myself from everything in life, and I essentially immersed myself in the project of writing it. I had a lot of material, but I didn't have a book. And when I was writing it, that draft, which really was my first draft, but then it changed not so much from that draft. There were small changes. I didn't show it to anybody. I was really writing for an internalized reader, what I think Bakhtin calls a super addressee, which is someone who you assume has complete understanding of you and a generous perspective towards you. And I was writing for that imagined reader as opposed to for, say, my editor or poetry friends I have or how it might be read in the world. And I think that served me personally well because I was able to really write from my own perspective as opposed to adjusting or translating in anticipation of the reception it might receive.
Well, that's interesting, like judging and anticipating the reception it might receive. I mean, maybe we can expand this to talk about going to poetry readings, because every poet that reads has a different idea of exactly what you're saying, right?
Well, of course. They're going to have their experience of whatever you're reading. And in fact,
but also when we're being read too as an audience, there's certain kinds of expectations about how we're going to take in a type of reading based on, let's say, if we're talking about social groups and whether we're in that social group or not that's being discussed.
What are you thinking about? Do you have like an example or something that you're envisioning as you say that?
I'm not. I know this is kind of exploring this issue, but depending on what it is you're talking about, if you're talking about a gender-based issue or other issues that have to do with where we're from or political outlooks, that the reading that the poet's going to give is somehow wrapped up in perhaps a message that may meet the way the poet's intending with some participants, but not with others, because of their backgrounds and points of view.
I do think that there are expectations around how someone from any kind of ethnic or racial position that isn't part of the dominant position writes. There's going to be cliches about it, whether the writer is going to write about their past or use images from the food or the old country, or whether they're going to translate for the dominant reader, the general reader, who's usually really a white reader, and what happens if it isn't translated or adjusted for that position of the audience member. I mean, if you just speak out of your subject position, then what? Will people not want to read it? Will they not come to it? Actually, there's this theorist, Carl Jaus, who has this idea. It's about, I think it's called the horizon of expectations in reading, but it's essentially that if you want to change people's perspective, you first have to have them enter your book or your writing, and only once they're sort of inside of it and comfy and sitting in an armchair do you start to move things around. And if you notice, sci-fi often does that. They start the story on Earth with familiar opposing characters. It'll be like I'm thinking of Octavia Butler's Dawn. You know, it'll be like scientists on Earth, some are black, some are white, and then they go to another planet and they band together against this alien race. But first you have to have that reference point that's familiar in some way. That's his theory. So the question is, how do we do that when we're writing from a subject position that isn't familiar?
That's a good question. Very well put. Yeah. So yeah, how do we do that? How do you approach that, for example? That's complicated.
Well, I think the first thing you have to do if you're going to think of it that way is kind of self-alienate. So first you have to think of your position as alien in order to think of it as different. It's very confusing psychologically, I think.
It is, but that's also your background. You're an analyst as well. Is that correct?
That's true.
So that's why I find it interesting to talk about this as a poet and also an analyst and someone who's reading different theorists. You're not only trying to write poetry like everyone else, but aware of the reception perhaps in a different way than other people. And we could talk more about that what you were just discussing. You know, how do you approach that alienating yourself from yourself in order to inhabit a different voice, right?
Yeah, Laura Mulvey, who's a film theorist, a feminist film theorist, talks about it in terms of doubling oneself. And, of course, Ralph Ellison has double consciousness. The idea that in order to watch, she's talking about Hollywood films, a woman will double herself and adopt a male gaze in order to look through the view of the angle or the angle of the camera. And so maybe it's also you have to first alienate from yourself in order to double yourself.
Mm. That's so interesting.
But this is all in order to reoccupy yourself, if that's the goal. Or do you stay in that doubled position and speak out of that position? I think you can feel when people are doing what. Like you started the discussion with readings. I think if you're in the audience at a reading, you can feel whether someone is inside of themselves or inside of their subject position and speaking from it, or if they've done some kind of self-alienating doubling movement.
So you talk about that's so interesting. So you talk about getting outside of it, but how does that actually happen psychologically? How do we get outside of something? And it makes sense that this is would actually give you a more authentic potentially. Sound, right, to your writing, but what is the process for getting outside of yourself, for alienating yourself from yourself, as you put it? How do we do that?
Well, in sort of at the daily level, we do it all the time through an observing ego, is what it's called in psychology. Basically, you look at yourself from an outside perspective. If we didn't do that, there would be no shame. We feel shame when we adopt an outside perspective, even if it's an imagined one, and we look at ourselves from it. So at some level, whenever you ask yourself the question, what would people think? Or how would so-and-so respond? That we're making that move of exiting ourselves and looking at ourselves from an outside position constantly. Mm. So it's not wildly foreign, but if you're writing something like poetry and you're writing it from your position, even if you're not writing autobiographical work, it is complicated, those movements.
And what will happen next with your poem? Your book is out. Do you go? Are you reading the book a lot? Is that part of what you're doing in your practice?
Not so much.
We're talking about reading. I'm not saying you have to, but that's interesting too,
no,
right? Like
I
how
do,
much
I
you
have,
need to get out there. Is that
fair,
the way it should work or not?
I have a fair amount. I love doing readings, but when I do readings, what I tend to do is write something specific which incorporates the poetry for that reading, for that audience, for that venue. So it's bigger as a project for me than getting up and reading some of my poems to an audience. I feel like I try to create something that will exist between me and that audience. It's something I really enjoy doing, but it's time consuming. So I do it, but I don't do it. I don't do many, many readings as some people do.
And you go to many readings? I mean, what do you see happening now in, let's just say, the poetry world? Everybody has their own circle, I suppose. There's poets you read, and everyone's reading different things. But what's happening in poetry now? How do you see it in terms of its activity? If I can ask that.
Well, I've actually, because both of my books were published in the UK first, I've actually become involved in the UK poetry scene, and I think that scene is really interesting, and I don't know how many Americans follow it, but I think there are many poets there, especially some of the younger poets, who are doing really exciting work and experimenting with form and voice and a lot of these issues we've been talking about, which isn't to say that there isn't a lot that's really interesting that's happening in New York. I don't know that I could really represent what's happening in poetry these days, but I do think a lot of interesting work is coming out of the UK. I will say that. I think it's a little bit, it feels very cutting edge to me right now.
And you think there's a different tone to what's coming out of the UK? I mean, that's very interesting, to whether that's, because there is often, an approach towards the arts, a difference culturally. And is there something coming out of the UK in particular that you think is just exciting, or you're just saying there's a lot of work at the moment that looks good?
Well, I think I was there, I was in Scotland in November, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking about where we'd gone, each of us, with our poetry and the poetry we were interested in. And she had organized a day-long event around the launch of her book. Sophie Collins, she's brilliant. She has a new book out called Who is Mary Sue? And one of the things she said that I found really interesting was she said, I don't know if I could ever really feel interested again in just straightforward lyric poetry. And whether or not that's true, I do think that there is so much going on that has really pushed the boundaries of straightforward lyric poetry that it does seem that to go back to reading lyric poetry, it's not as though I still enjoy it, but it doesn't excite me the way some of these new approaches and new forms that are being written I find incredibly exciting and boundary pushing, really.
And is there any other issue I feel like we should explore, where we're moving more into areas around poetry in this, in part two of your interview, the first time we talked specifically about your writing? Is there other issues that you see happening in the writing world that impact poets, for example, the critic's relationship to the poet and the critic in the art world, in the visual art world? That's a very strong relationship, and one that's kind of fraught, with difficulty sometimes, because there's a lot of different ways of approaching being a critic of an artwork. You can, for example, talk about the cultural context of the artist and how he or she is producing work, or you can talk about how they're struggling with materials and what they're trying to build there. In terms of poet and criticism, is there that kind of rub or something equivalent?
Well, I think it's easiest for critics to gravitate towards what they can write about, and some things are more difficult to write about than others. So this sort of dovetails back into where we began. I think if you take, for example, a poet's ethnic background and where they came from, and you use their life story to frame your review or your criticism, it becomes much easier to write about. That's not always what is most compelling about the work itself. Maybe it's not even what drew the critic to the work, but I think that is what we see most often, is that the criticism is being framed in some way. But then even as I say that, I want to actually contradict myself, because I do think that in all genres of writing right now, the genre boundaries are being reassigned. And so I think even criticism itself has become more and more creative, and I think there are many people who are writing in ways that aren't as predictable as they were in the past. And that's true of poetry, fiction, criticism, and even the nonfiction memoir. I feel like maybe people don't need to have the boundaries as fixed as they once were. And so a lot of exciting work comes out of that.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good point. Before we go, I asked you what you were reading. I don't know if you're reading. I would imagine you're reading something different now. Can you share with me before we go what it is that you're reading at the moment, or any story or book you're interested in? There'll be links to yours, of course, as there was last time, for those interested in your books, like fourth person singular.
Oh, I always have so many books going on. I just got in the mail Sophie Collins' book, Who Is Mary Sue? And it's phenomenal. It's a book of poetry, and it's published by Faber. I think it's brilliant. And I'm also reading three books of Janet Malcolm's that have been reissued by Granta, Psychoanalysis, The Impossible Profession, The Journalist and the Murderer, and in the Freud Archives, because I'm writing a piece sort of loosely about them. Those would be my most immediate books today. And then very randomly this morning on the train, I started reading Chekhov's The Seagull again. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've got going on. Can I ask
well,
you the same
you.
Question? Am I allowed to? What are you reading?
Yeah, you can ask me the same question. I'm also have a pile of things that I'd like to get through. I'm reading the biography by Da Vinci that just came out. That's exciting to me. It's a great read, a very exciting read. I'm reading another book by
someone that I interviewed once before called Andrea Scrimma. It's called A Lesser Day. And then I'm trying to get through Christopher Hitchens' book, God Is Not Great. And there's another book by, I think, Chuck Klosterman that I never read, Thinking About the Present as if it were the Past, or What If Everything We Know Is Wrong, right? Right. Like, I don't know, but I have a bunch of things around, and I keep going from book to book. I wish I could schedule more time for myself to just read every day. That's my fantasy anyway.
Maybe if you have a vacation coming up.
Yeah, but I'd like a little bit of one every single day so I could kind of immerse myself in all of these because I feel bad.
Well, that's the great thing about living in New York is the subway. My subway rides are really my time for reading.
Right, that's so true. That's interesting. Well, Noor, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you so much. It was really fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.